You're listening to a Stranger podcast, www.thestranger.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Hey, everybody, it's Dan. Welcome to the Savage Lovecast, the once a week out loud version of my sex advice column, Savage Love. The number here, 206-201-2720. I lisp today. Today I'm a little extra gay. We will get right to the calls now because we have many calls. And it's going to be a very gay, and a little lesbian show today. So if you're one of those sensitive straight people who just can't bear it when the show's not all about you, you might want to skip to next week's show.
Hi, Dan. I have a question that's been nagging me for years, and I wonder if you've ever heard anyone else report the same phenomenon. I'm wondering if you've ever heard of any women who say that their sexual orientation, if you will, waxes and wanes depending on their monthly cycle. I find myself at certain times of the month much more interested in women or in thinking about women than at other times of the month. I guess I would identify overall as bi, though with extremely little experience with women, and this monthly waxing and waning is one of the things that makes me hesitate to completely identify as bi because it comes and goes. So I'm just wondering if you've ever had any experience with this, if you've heard of this before from other women, and I'll be interested to hear what you have to say. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
Maybe you're a lesbian. Just going to throw that out there because you don't say at what point during your sexual cycle you become super duper interested in women and extra super duper horny. I assume it's when you're ovulating, which is when most women find their sexual desire, their horniness kind of peaks because they're pumping out eggs and we're sort of programmed, you women are sort of programmed, but of course by an intelligent designer and a higher power and me, to be extra super horny then so that you can, you know, get some spunk into those eggs. But, you know, being humans and being complicated and having big fat brains, sometimes, you know, what biology says we should be looking for isn't exactly what we're looking for emotionally or sexually or intimately. So if when you're ovulating during your period, if that's when it happens, you suddenly are just swamped with desire for the ladies, maybe that's sort of your baseline underlying sexual orientation. Your sexual orientation really is you're really primarily at bottom oriented toward women, and women are what turn your crank when you're at your horniest because women are, you know, generally what work for you. Now, why aren't you with a woman? I have no clue. I think you should listen to your body. You should run out there. You say you're bisexual with very little experience with women. Well, clearly your body is telling you that it would like some sexual experience with women. And it could just be that, you know, when you are at your horniest during your cycle, your erotic imagination just fixates on this thing that you haven't yet provided it with. Your body and, you know, your erotic imagination and your cycle's been telling you for ages that it wants some pussy and you're not getting it any pussy. So it's just going to, you know, bang that cup against the bars louder and louder and louder until you come through with some fucking pussy. So maybe you're a dyke. Maybe you're just, you know, you've frustrated your libido long enough and your subconscious mind is insisting. It's putting its foot down. But whatever it is, I actually haven't heard of this before. I haven't heard of people saying their sexual orientation changes based on their cycle, although female sexual orientation is much more fluid than male sexual orientation because I can assure you that during my period, I don't become straight.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old gay male, and I've been with my boyfriend for about 9 months now. The other night, we were talking about fetishes, and he was kind of reluctant to tell me his, but I finally dragged it out of him, and he told me that he was into piss play. I've never been into water sports myself, but I love this guy, and I want to make him happy. So I told him that I would experiment with him, but I just want to know how safe it is first. I know we are both clean as far as diseases and stuff, but he wants to do things like piss in my mouth or on my face and even inside my ass. He says he's done it before with his ex and that it's safe, but I wanted to ask you before he goes pissing in my ass or into my mouth or anything like that, if you could let me know the risks involved, if any, that would be great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's just hot water, really. Provided it's not the first thing in the morning and you didn't have asparagus souffle for dinner, it's just hot water. It's sterile. If he has no other sexually transmitted infections, you are not going to get sick and from drinking it or him pissing up your butt. You don't want to drink nothing else for weeks and weeks at a time. As we learned in Savage Love Once, you will get gout and also bad breath and jaundice. You may get jaundice. I'm not sure because I haven't run any controlled experiments, but if you want to run one for me, you can go right ahead. It's safe. It's cool that you're willing to go there. You know, this for some people, the whole piss play thing can be a real barrier because, you know, they sort of lump piss play in with shit play. You know, it's excrement and it's, you know, bodily wastes. And they're really very different gur animals, shit and piss, when it comes to A, their eroticization, and B, the practicality of, you know, incorporating them into your sex life. Shit is very dangerous. You know, it is waste that is just full of, you know, bugs and microbes and bacteria, and you just don't want to be messing around with it in general, and you certainly don't want to be ingesting it. Piss is a very different byproduct of your body. And, you know, I don't want to come across like I'm giving it this big ringing endorsement or anything. So I don't want everyone who comes to my house in the summer for barbecues to be scared of the lemonade or anything. But you'll be fine. The same restrictions, the same cautions that you want to take with enemas, like not overdoing it, you want to take if you're going to allow him to piss up your butt. There are concerns not so much about urine but about HIV. You say you're both clean. You are also both very young and you haven't been dating for that long. And I wouldn't at this stage in the relationship allow my boyfriend to put his cock in my ass without a condom on it, which is pretty much a requirement, of course, if he's going to urinate inside of you. So you might want to kick that can down the road a bit. You might want to hold that out as the reward, perhaps, if you guys really do make a serious commitment and you are absolutely confident that he is not HIV positive and not doing anything outside of the relationship that could cause him to become HIV positive and bring it home and piss it up your ass.
Hi, I'm a 21-year-old gay male, and I had an older acquaintance at the local gay bar here, and, you know, he's very nice, always very welcoming, and likes to see me when I get there. And having sent my own father to prison for sexually molesting me for most of my young life, I just recently found out that this acquaintance that I have is also a convicted child molester. How am I supposed to react or feel about this, or should I just disregard it and just keep on being his friend?
Hey, it's Dan Savage. Just listened to your phone message, and I wanted to give you a call.
Great.
This is a bad moment?
No, this is perfect.
Okay, so first of all, I'm really sorry that you lost the dad sweepstakes in such a huge way.
Yeah.
That really sucks.
It does.
You ask me how are you supposed to react and to the news that this person that you have sort of an acquaintanceship with is, you know, also had molested children. And my question for you is, well, how do you feel about it? How did you react? What do you need to do to be at peace with this? Like, what do you want? How did you feel when he told you, when you found out?
Well, he actually didn't tell me. I actually saw his picture online on the convicted felons list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was torn because, you know, he was such a nice guy. You know, he always gave me a hug when I saw him at the bar. And, you know, and I just thought, you know, because I don't know how to react.
Do you know the circumstances of his conviction?
No, I don't.
Okay, so, you know, it could have been something similar to what your father did. It could have been he was with a guy who was, you know, 12 hours too young. You know, who was
right.
On the
you know, I don't know.
You might want to go find out the circumstances. You also might want to, just for your own sanity, this isn't a best friend. This isn't a guy you were dating.
Right.
Right? This is just an acquaintanceship. I would, you know, be cool to him if that's what you need to protect yourself emotionally. You're not obligated to be buddies with child molesters, particularly
right.
in your history.
Right.
You're allowed to be a bit of an asshole to protect yourself emotionally.
Okay.
So if you want nothing more to do with him, you give yourself permission to have nothing more to do with him. If you want to give him any benefit of the doubt and try to find out what exactly happened, go find out what exactly happened.
Okay.
Or ask him.
Is it any of my business?
It is your business if he wants to maintain this friendship slash acquaintanceship. It is your business because you're in the position now of knowing what you know.
Okay.
And liking him enough to maybe say to him, you know, I have this, you know, I had bad experience with this, with being a victim.
Right.
And I like you, but, you know, you need to tell me exactly what happened if we want to, like, stay on friendly terms, because I need to know if it was anything similar to what happened to me, and if it was, I can't be buddies.
Right.
Or even if it was dissimilar to what happened to you, but was still incredibly vicious and awful, you won't be able to be his pal. You got to protect yourself in this situation first, not worry about hurting his feelings.
Okay.
But, you know, all these people on sex offender registries, they know their pictures are out there.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to have to explain themselves from time to time to people who run across them. And he probably already has had to a couple of times. So you might want to ask him about it. But then, you know what? Verify.
Okay. What is forgiveness?
What is forgiveness isn't, I pretend that it didn't happen.
It's not that?
Yeah, forgiveness isn't, we're going to now move on and pretend that what happened didn't happen and that I don't know what I do know and that you didn't do what I know you did to me or somebody else.
Right.
Forgiveness is recognizing that everyone is human and that people make mistakes, sometimes horrible mistakes, and sometimes do horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
But to live on the planet and share the planet and get along, sometimes you have to say to someone, I will never forget, but I will forgive you.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And it is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. Choices were taken away from you. Choices were made for you. You were abused. The choice to forgive or not to forgive is your power reasserting itself.
Okay.
And nobody can tell you you must or have to. You get to decide if and when you're ready to take that step. Okay?
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you so much for calling me back.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, Dan. My name is Roger, and I have a 12-year-old son who just came out to his mom and I last fall. And we're both really happy and impressed that he has figured this out about himself already. He understandably still wants to be really private with this information. But he and I are very close, and I've tried to figure out the best ways to be supportive. At first, I was kind of preachy about the social activism part of being gay because he's actually lucky enough to go to a middle school that has a lesbian gay alliance group. And I wanted him to get involved and meet other kids, but he's not interested or ready for that. And then I tried to find an age-appropriate local group here in Portland or online, but especially with online sites, he's just too young for what's out there. So now I've just backed off because I know he has plenty of time to figure out what works for him. But here's my problem. He loves talking to his mom about who he likes and who he thinks is cute, but he just won't even go there with me. We've always been close, and I always imagined at this age that we would have some great talks. His new feelings he's having about, you know, attraction to others. But I guess maybe I've made him feel awkward. I don't know if I'm being too sensitive, but I just don't want this to be a taboo subject with us. But I also don't want to be overbearing. I just want him to talk to me and feel comfortable doing it. Is there any advice or magic spells that you have for this?
Hey, it's Dan.
Hey, Dan.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for calling me back.
Sure. My advice?
Yeah.
Back off. And chill out. It sounds like you're already halfway there to realizing that that's what you need to do. Look, if he was a little straight boy, you know, he would probably be more comfortable talking about the girls he was into with you, with his dad, than with his mom, who happens to be a girl, too. You know, you add on top of, you know, him being attracted to boys, also, you know, the homophobia in the culture and the sometimes, you know, the issues that little gay boys can sometimes have with presuming their fathers are less supportive than they sometimes are. And it's either or both or some combo, but you have to give him the benefit of the doubt and just assume that it's because he's into boys, he's going to talk to his mom, who is also into boys, about this, and it's going to be less awkward for him and less sort of threatening and weird for him.
Right.
My sister, when she
was... I guess I was thinking just because of the age, too, he would... He's at that age where he's just going to be keeping more from me, you know? And, I mean, that's just part of that, being becoming independent.
Right.
So...
And you don't want to hound him.
Yeah.
Be chill. You need to be chill. You should maybe have a conversation with you where you acknowledge that, hey, right now you're much more comfortable talking with your mom about this stuff, and that's great. I just want you talking to one of us about it. And if you ever want to talk to me about it, I'm here, but if you're not comfortable talking with me about it, that's cool. You just need to give him permission to do what he's doing now so that later, if he wants to change his mind, it won't be fraught. So that he knows the door is open, but he knows that you're not on the other side of the door trying to push it down. Because that'll just creep him out.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. I guess I don't know. I was thinking that I don't know if I'm just making enough effort to allow him to be himself around me. But it sounds like
you're making too much effort. If you're trying to find out about clubs for him to join and groups, and you're checking out websites, like, allow him to be self-motivated. If he's a little wired kid in Portland, Oregon, with supportive parents, he has instantaneous access, assuming you guys have a computer in your home, to support.
Yeah.
He can find it if he's so motivated. You know, there's a lot of kids out there who are gay who don't join any clubs, who don't particularly feel like they need to join a support group or a gay and lesbian alliance because they're secure and they already have supportive parents, and then maybe they're just not joiners. Maybe he wants to join the Spanish club instead. You know what I mean? And you need to not do the thing that sometimes supportive parents do, which is that they make this child's sexuality this referendum on the whole family and make it into a big family project to demonstrate how good and supportive you guys are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, and I think I did go overboard in that respect.
And better you go overboard that way than pack him off to some anti-gay religious torture camp in Utah somewhere. So even if you made him a little uncomfortable, one day, if he doesn't already, he'll appreciate that it could have been a whole fuck of a lot worse.
Right.
You need to take a deep breath. He's gay. He's out. Your mom... his mom is there for him to vet boys that he might be interested in and help him discuss his tastes. And hopefully, you know, when he comes out in school and he starts dating, you guys will be there to monitor and vet and interfere like you would in his life if he was a straight kid. Don't fall into the trap of having to support, you know, if he's 14 and he's bringing home a 30-year-old, for dinner, don't fall into the trap of being, well, we can't tell him that we think that's wrong because then he'll think we're not supportive. Like, you should be unsupportive of bad choices just like you would be unsupportive of bad choices if you were a straight kid.
Yeah.
And supportive of good choices. And as a young gay guy, your son, you really should treat him, and this is just extra spare advice, has nothing to do with what you asked about, parents are tend to be more aggressive about monitoring their daughters' dating life when their daughters first sort of get out there in the world. And the reason that is because men are shits.
Right. Right.
You need to treat him a bit like he's your daughter when he starts dating.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought about when I was looking at clubs and stuff or online. I was like, wow, there's such a predatory culture for just guys, you know, hetero or gay, that I just like, well, this
right.
is
it's a predatory
too much.
Culture. Male heterosexuality creates a predatory culture. Male sexuality creates predatory cultures, whether we're talking about the straight world or the gay world. And when he's young and naive... And, you know, the vast and overwhelming majority of gay men, you know, over 20, when he's a teenager, are not going to want to have anything to do with him. But the guys who might want to have something to do with him are a self-selected group of jackasses.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to be on your guard.
Right.
And not that they are all, like, my first boyfriend when I was 18 was 28, and he was great. Just what I needed. Right?
Yeah.
For the summer. But he deserved no benefit of the doubt as we went into that relationship. He had to prove that he was not a scumbag. He had to be a presumed scumbag. So, you know, if your kid, when he's, you know, a high school senior brings home a college senior, don't beat him to death. Like, check him out, but, you know, be wary.
Right.
Because, just like, you know, one of the reasons, you know, we're concerned for our daughters when they're out there dating men is that young women have to deal with a lot of the emotional fallout, right? Because they're the ones who get pregnant, and because men are violent and can't be trusted necessarily, and blah, blah, blah. Well, when he's a young gay guy, he is going to have to, I don't want to, like, conjure up horrible images for dad, but, you know, when he's young and gay, he may be the one getting fucked, and that puts him at greater risk of the sexually transmitted diseases and the emotional fallout of being intimate in that way, of letting someone inside your body.
Right.
And so he really is, for all practical purposes, when he first gets out there and first starts dating, your daughter, and you need to treat him like one.
Yeah, and that thought has crossed my mind, too. But, you know, in general, it's not something I really think about. I mean, as far as our relationship, I have kind of already backed off, and I guess I just kind of felt left out, but I know that's really kind of irrational. So
it's totally understandable. It is a little irrational. You and your wife are, parenting is, for you guys, a relay race. And it's tag team, and there are going to be times when he's going to draw from you, and times he's going to draw from your wife, and you need to not be jealous. Don't poison the well.
Right.
Be confident that your wife is doing what needs to be done right now at this moment for him, and that he'll call on you if you don't make him feel like he did something wrong on going to the parent that he felt most comfortable at this time going to with the issues he's got.
Yeah. Okay.
But thank God he's got you two. Oh my God. There's like gay 12-year-olds being tortured to death in polygamous fucking Mormon camps in Utah and Texas somewhere right this minute. And he's so lucky.
Yeah, well, I'm just really impressed that he even at this age would come out, I mean, feel that self-confident about it. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy, you know, with where things stand just from that respect. And that we live in a city that I think is in itself is a pretty good city to be in, you know, as far as the gay culture goes. So,
yeah, if I was going to be gay in 12, I'd rather be in Portland than Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, Dad.
All right, thanks.
Talk to you later.
Hi, Dan. I have a question for you. I was noticing that there is a lot of bareback porn seems to be really proliferating now, and I just wanted your take on the whole bareback porn thing. I know that in, I guess, like the late 80s and the 90s, they started using condoms when the AIDS crisis was really in full force, and I just wanted to know what you thought about bareback porn today. Is there anything that regulates it? Is it any safer than it used to be, and what are the ethical problems with watching bareback porn?
Watching bareback porn, consuming bareback porn, creating a demand for bareback porn, creating a market for bareback porn, shares some similar ethical concerns to the watching of child pornography, and just shares a couple. That's not an identical problem. One of the reasons that possessing or owning child pornography that's already even been produced, and even it was produced 30 years ago, and everyone's all grown up, and no one else is going to get hurt. One of the reasons it's illegal is because a market for child pornography creates a demand for child pornography, which gets children raped. Right? So child porn is and should be illegal. The problem with bareback porn, the problem with people out there thinking, that they have no responsibility for the porn that they consume and what the end result is of the porn that they consume. I kind of lose my libertarianism on this issue, which is why I'm sort of hemming and hawing and futzing around. Most of the people making bareback porn are young and naive, and they're being preyed upon by porn producers who have no ethics. And there's also, go and Google bareback porn, HIV infections, and regret, and you'll find a lot of stories about, guys who are 18, 19 years old who blew into San Francisco or London or Prague and did a bunch of bareback porn and got themselves infected because they didn't know what the fuck that they were doing because they were naive and young and they were lied to and they were manipulated. And they basically traded their health for $500 so that people out there that want to vicariously enjoy barebacking without actually taking the risks themselves of barebacking could rub one out in their apartments in the middle of the night. I think that's wrong. There's plenty of bareback porn out there that was produced before AIDS. And to watch bareback porn produced now really makes you complicit in the ongoing exploitation of young gay guys who don't know their asses from holes in the ground but shouldn't be filling either with strangers' spunk. So what are the ethics of watching bareback porn? The ethics are bad, and people should think about what they're doing. And we're not even talking about bareback porn that fetishizes infection, where some poor young motherfucker gets fucked by a dozen guys and it's sort of a bug-chasing video, or they're the pornos for sale on the Castro Street in San Francisco where, you know, cum popsicles are made with God knows how many men spunk, and then some young twink fucks himself with that. That's just sick. And I don't call a lot of things sick. I'm pretty permissive. That's just the fetishization of gay self-hatred and the will to self-destruction by someone, and I'm talking about the consumer here, who doesn't have the courage or the consideration to just go fucking destroy himself. You hate yourself so much, or you hate gay people so much, you hate gay life so much, that you want, that you think gay sex should be about the destruction of the object of desire, about watching that person throw their life away for your entertainment. Please, God, just do us a favor and throw your own fucking gay life away and blow your own fucking head off. And don't create a market for porn where young people who are still trying to find their way in the world are sucked in by porn producers who convince them that there's something sexy or edgy or erotic or interesting about them destroying their health for the entertainment of some deeply sick fucking queer old faggots out there.
Hi, Dan. My name is Jens. I'm a 20-year-old queer working class person of color, and I live in Portland, Oregon. And I have a question that pertains to race and gay men. I've been hanging out with a lot of gay men since I was 13, and most of the gay men that I meet are white, middle class, relatively privileged, and growing up in somewhat rough circumstances, I tend to notice that a lot of gay men that I date or just that I hang out with are sometimes maybe insensitive to issues of race. I hear a lot of gay guys throwing around racial slurs like cholo or like they say they have yellow fever, or they call each other rice queens, you know, if they want to date Asian people. And whenever I try and bring it up and I with someone who's close to me, they always get very touchy, and they say that I'm calling them a racist, but I'm just trying to maybe make them more sensitive to these issues. And so I'm not really sure how to bring these issues up. I feel like they're important, but maybe they're not. I would just like to hear your thoughts on how to talk about these issues with other gay men.
Hello.
Hey, it's Dan.
Hi, Dan.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited that you called me.
Well, I hope you're as excited when we get to the end of this call as you are at the start.
I probably will be.
So you're 20, and you've been out for a while.
Mm-hmm. Long time.
And you live in a place where, you know, the gay white kids from the small towns in the great nearby are always pouring in, right?
Correct,
like,
yeah.
Little gay boy refugees from Eastern Oregon and the woods in Northern California and Vancouver, Washington, are always moving to a place like Portland, right?
Correct.
A lot of these little gay white kids don't know their asses from holes in the ground when they arrive.
Right.
And are from really sheltered environments where maybe they, you know, were keenly aware of their own difference, but never sensitized to anyone else's.
Yeah.
So you're going to encounter this a lot, particularly at your age, assuming that you're running with, you know, a crowd of guys who are roughly your same age.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they will have some sense fucked into them during that time, during that period of their lives, right?
Right.
So you need to not say all the gay white guys I'm meeting are like this, therefore all gay white guys from age 10 to age 80 are like this. Because a lot of, you know, a lot of white gay guys do say stupid offensive things when they first come out, and then they're thrown into a community that's sort of, you know, this reduction of the rest of the world, this concentrated sort of selection from the rest of the world, because we're such a tiny minority group that we all end up in the same rooms together. People who, if they had not been gay, would never have been in the same room with people of color, with people of other religions, with people from big cities even, right? And it can take some time for people's eyes to open. And you can be a part of opening their eyes. And all you have to say is, you know, Rice Queen, when you say it like that, that's kind of offensive. It's not, you know, you don't even use the upward inflection that I just did, which I screamed about last week, but there you go. You can be part of opening their eyes. I wouldn't blow my stack if I were you.
Uh-huh.
I don't blow my stack at people who make weird assumptions about me, because I've found it's been my experience that it's ineffective. That if you scream and yell, you can make someone defensive. You know, I've had people come up to me and ask me when I'm with my son, "Where's the mom? Where's your mother?" Mm-hmm. And I know some gay parents who, you know, scream and yell, say, "There is no mother," and like blow their stacks. And people walk away with the impression that gay parents are insecure douchebags. And I know that when I meet somebody with a kid, I always look over the shoulder for the mom, too, because most people are, most kids do have moms nearby when they have dads. So it's not a totally irrational or offensive assumption. Blah, blah, blah. It's nothing to do with what we're talking about. So I think, you know, your best course is to recognize kind of the special superpower. You know, it's not a role, it's not a responsibility, it's kind of a superpower that you have in these circumstances with these young gay white kids, where you get to blow and open their minds by saying blank, by saying, "That's not, you know, I like you, you're nice, that wasn't nice, and I know saying not nice things isn't like you, you shouldn't say that, and it's offensive for X, Y, and Z if you want to talk about it," but and make not using phrases like "Rice Queen" the price of admission to be your friend.
That's like, it's also difficult too, because I feel like a lot of the time, I mean, like for some reason, maybe more so in the gay community, like race is like a huge qualification for who you're going to date. You know, and it's like, it kind of gets in the way, I found sometimes, like I'm, for instance, like I'm half Asian and part Native American and part white. And so it's like, there are white people who won't, you know, there are a lot of white people that won't date me because I'm half Asian. There are a lot of people who only date exclusively Asians that won't date me because I'm half white. And so there's like, part of it is like, I don't know how to deal with those people. Like,
well, one of the two-edged swords of like coming out as gay is you've made a statement about who you want to sleep with, and usually at great personal cost, you've made that statement. So gay people can tend to feel like they have a right to continue making that statement at all times. And we kind of do. I think it's one of the good things about gay and lesbian life, or gay men's life, is that once you've said I'm gay, it's easy to say I'm gay and I'm into Asian dudes. And I paid a high price to come out and sleep with the people who I wanted to sleep with, and so I'm going to go sleep with the people who I wanted to sleep with. People tend to cling to that more when they're younger. These things tend to mellow as you age. And so the problem won't be as extreme as you start running with slightly older guys, as you age yourself, who have worked through this bullshit, right? Including worked through assumptions they made about their own taste in men when they were 19 that didn't turn out to be true, because happy experience opened their eyes to other kinds of people and types of people and types of sexual expression. I guess what I just mean to say is it's at its worst right now. and it'll chill out. So, you know, as long as you don't curdle and turn bitter about it, it'll have less of an impact on your life in 10 years than it does now. Yeah. I can see your frustration in being mixed race and not, you know, ruled out by the guys who don't want to sleep with Asians and then ruled out by the guys who do want to sleep with Asians. But, you know, we all have our crosses to bear. I'm ruled out by a lot of guys for a lot of different reasons that don't necessarily tie to my race. And you kind of have to shrug off the guys that don't want to sleep with you for whatever reason and obsess about it. I'm sure there are guys that want to sleep with you.
I hope so, man. God.
Well, go ahead.
Sorry, it's like college is... I go to like a really small liberal arts college on the East Coast right now, and it's like coming from Portland, it's really weird. I feel like very like the dating, I guess the gay scene on this small college in the middle of nowhere is kind of very dry. Everything gets sort of futile right now, I guess.
It'll get better. Everyone has their dry spells, and it can be a temptation when you're having a weird-ass dry spell to try to pin it to the what can seem like the most obvious reason or the one that sort of completely exonerates you or makes everyone else an asshole. And say,
yeah.
Here I am, and I have this big dry spell, and it's because, oh, I'm here in the East Coast, and all these motherfuckers are racists. You know what I mean? And maybe it's maybe there's just... you're not working for any of the guys there. They're not working for you. You know, maybe some of the guys it is because they're racist, or maybe there's some guys who aren't into you because of something else. You know? And I'm not saying that there aren't white gay male racists out there, but you're going to make yourself crazy if you see a white gay male racist under every rejection.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you need to kind of shrug it off a little bit. Which is not saying give all gay white men out there, and I'm saying this is a gay white man, so I have my biases, not give us all a pass at all times. But go find the guys that want to fuck you. Half Asian, part white, part Native American guys? That sounds hot to this fact.
Awesome.
Not that I'm making any offers on the podcast, because my boyfriend is on the podcast, but you know what I mean?
I do. Okay.
Talk to you later.
All right, thank you, bye.
Hey Dan, love your podcast. I'm a gay male that has gotten fat. About a year and a half ago, I moved from a big city where I walked to work and had an active job to a smaller city where I drive to work and have a desk job. So unfortunately, I've gained about 100 pounds from a cute 145, or so I was told, to a rotund 245 pounds. I'm not complaining about the weight gain. However, as you know, in the gay community, extra pounds are not exactly acceptable. I understand the health problems. I've adopted a healthy diet and exercise program, but 100 pounds aren't going to drop overnight. I enjoy going to gay bars, even in this small city, but I don't seem to fit in so well. So do you have any suggestions for a not-so-perfect gay man and how I might find other not-so-perfect gay men?
Hello?
Hi, it's Dan.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Can you talk for a second?
Yeah, I'm free.
Okay, so before we get to your questions, I have a question.
Okay.
How did you gain 100 pounds in a year and a half? Or did you not look down when it was 50 pounds and go, fuck?
Yeah, I did, actually, but, it was this complete lifestyle change. I went from living in Chicago, where I walked to work, to living in Pittsburgh, where I sit at my desk for 9 hours a day.
And two. Right? I mean, it has to be about diet, ultimately. Even if you have a desk job, change radically. Like, what are you eating for breakfast, and what are you eating for lunch, and what are you eating for dinner, and what are you eating in between?
It's mostly because of what I eat at night. I eat, like, pizza and burgers and all that kind of stuff, which I'm changing now, finally.
Yeah,
but...
Stop. Stop eating all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you know that walking to work is an easy way for you to keep weight off, park 4 miles away and walk to work. Pittsburgh's a nice place to walk around downtown. Do you work downtown?
I work near it, and, yeah, I mean, that's actually a good suggestion, so, which I could do, because there's, like, a row of buildings, so I could park at the last one.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm working with doctors.
People say sometimes, you know, I got a desk job and then, you know, as if you have a desk job, the universe requires you to eat the same amount you're eating before when you're burning more calories, and that nothing can be done about your daily routine. So you can't build any move. You know, my boyfriend and I had dinner last night at this place in downtown Seattle with some friends, and we ate like pigs, and then we declined a ride home and walked home, even though it was like 2 miles and straight uphill, because we thought,
right.
We ate so fucking much, we better go for a goddamn walk. And it's just,
it's it's definitely my fault. You shouldn't have burgers
or anything.
Right.
But you need to think about, you know, for your heart's sake, not just, we're not even talking about sex yet, and like the sexual marketplace, just like, that kind of weight is hard to get off, but it's also putting tremendous pressure on your internal organs, say nothing of your skeletal structure, and you need to knock it off and not act like you're defenseless or this happened to you, like you got hit by a fat meteorite.
Oh, right, no. I mean, like, it's definitely my, you know, my fault or whatever, but trying to resolve that with my doctor and everything, too, so...
good, because that kind,
cause
of, that kind of rapid weight gain is not healthy.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was really worried because, I mean, I realized it was, you know, unbelievable. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, health-wise I was okay, too, which,
right.
Fuck yeah, I am. It was just because I started eating like a pig and I stopped working out.
get back to the gym, start walking places, stop chewing so much.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then
yeah,
we can talk
yeah.
about what you called about instead of my, like, fat-phobic, the fatosphere is going to come after me for this call.
I mean, you've got to be healthy, you know, so that definitely is, you know, my concern.
And if you
but,
it,
yeah.
And if you put it on, you can take it off.
Oh, yeah.
So do it. Just fucking take it off. It's going to take a year and a half at least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm on
a... I want you to be one of those people I have to read about getting, bariatric surgery and then dying of a blood clot.
Right. Oh, no. I definitely don't want to go there. Just health reasons, let alone social reasons, which, you know, the reason I called, so.
Okay, well, intervention's over. How old did you say that you were?
I'm 27.
Okay, you're 27. You need to, you're talking about getting out, going out and socializing?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And wanting to get laid?
Yeah, I guess. It's been a while. Well, probably about a year and a half, so...
Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry. So you had time at the beginning of the marathon chewing session to the last time you had sex?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, there might be something at play there that you might want to examine with a shrink and not a totally unqualified shrieking faggot on the podcast. But, you know, there are people out there who are attracted to bigger guys, and you can exploit them at the moment. A lot of guys who are into big guys are not big guys themselves, so if you're not attracted to your own body type, which can be a problem for some big people, you can find these people who will fetishize your current form. Unfortunately, they will also incentivize you to maintain it, particularly if you fall in love with one of these guys, which I don't necessarily recommend.
Right.
And that's just in the short term. You know, right now, I actually don't even want to tell you to think about having sex and to think about getting laid. I think that you should remake your life in such a way that you're doing the things that you need to do to get back down to the weight that you were, to a healthy weight. And if you change the patterns of your life, if you're going to the gym, if you're walking, if you're doing active things, if you're not sitting home and eating crap at night, and you're actually getting out and doing things, you'll meet all sorts of people as you move through your days.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never really thought about that, honestly, because, I mean, it was, as bad as it may sound, maybe, thinking about the short term, because, you know, I didn't really want to meet someone serious in something in this state. I wanted to wait until I got back into, you know, I'm feeling normal and in a good routine. But
establish the good routine, establish the life you want to live, establish the healthy life you want to live, and you will meet people along the way. Join a gym. Sometimes people who are big feel like, oh, I can't go to the gym, I'm too fat for the gym. And as somebody who's gone to the gym all my life, otherwise I would weigh 4,000 pounds, when those of us who like sort of regularly go to gym see big people at the gym, we don't think, look at that fat person. We think, good for him.
Yeah, I got lucky. I have joined a gym that I like to call the normal people gym, where I do feel comfortable there, so I'm happy about that.
Well, go to the gym, do what you need to do to be out of the house and doing shit at night, and you'll meet people. I'm not going to tell you to, like, you know, go to Manhunt and advertise yourself as a chub, or go to Dudes Nude or whatever, or, you know, the bar where you're going to feel more comfortable. You just need to remake your life and get out there, and then one day you'll feel more comfortable back in those bars if you want to return to them. But right now I'd skip them and do the shit that I needed to do to drop the weight.
Yeah, that definitely puts it into perspective there, I guess. I focus more on the losing the weight first, and I'm worrying about the social.
Well, no. I'm not telling you that, because then what that does is it kicks the can way down the road, and what you're going to tell yourself is, I'm never going to meet anybody until I lose the weight, and then you'll feel miserable, and then you'll eat, right?
Right.
What you need to tell yourself is, I'm going to build a life for myself, where I'm going to be out of the house, I'm going to be doing interesting things, I'm going to be getting exercise, I'm going to be walking places. I don't know what the things that you enjoy are besides work and home and food, but I'm going to go do, you should go do all those things. And the world is full of fucking people, and a lot of them are gay, even in Pittsburgh. And you will meet shitloads of people if you're out there having a life. And along the way, while you're having this life that's going to return you to a healthy weight, you will meet lots of gay men, and you may meet some gay men who are attracted to you. So it's not like you have to get down to 145 and then you qualify again for gay love. Like, you qualify all along the way. And
yeah,
you're out of the fucking house and doing shit, whether it's about losing weight or doing the things that you enjoy that don't involve mastication, you will meet folks. Okay?
Yeah, definitely.
So get off your ass before there are three of them.
Oh, definitely. Well, yeah, I'm probably working on my second one here. But luckily, I got five down already here, so I'm just starting it. But hopefully on a successful journey here.
Good. Good luck.
No, thanks.
And give us a call and give us an update.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
All right, alert the fatosphere about my last call, because I was so fat-bashing. I joked about having three asses. And everyone knows that fat people don't have three asses, just one enormous one. 206-201-2720 is the number. And I'm not saying an enormous ass is necessarily a bad thing to have. If you want to have an enormous ass, if you're attracted to enormous asses, by all means, you should have an enormous ass. I'm not even saying they're not attractive. They are objectively attractive, because some people are actually attracted to them. But if you're unhappy having an enormous ass, maybe you should have less enormous an ass. The phone number here at the podcast, 206-201-2720. If you'd like to record a question for a future podcast, that's the number you need. Try to keep it under 2 minutes and include a phone number in case we want to call you back so I can yell at you in person, or yell at you live and on the phone. Anything else? The Popovers provided us with our intro and outro music today, and we love the Popovers, and we'll be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast.